Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby. It doesn't take itself all the game too seriously. Oh my goodness, I am hungover today, but I am here with Phil. Hello, Phil.
Hello, JB.
Do you like my fake enthusiasm?
I thought you sounded very professional when you kicked things off and then proclaimed your impending doom for your hangover.
It reminds me how I feel now. Have you ever seen... and how I've been behaving for the last 10 minutes. The episode of Father Ted, when they go to the Eurovision Song Contest.
I used to love... I still do. I've just not watched it for about 15 years. I love Father Ted.
They have the host who looks unshaven and just like an idiot. And then he goes live and he's all clean shaven.
Perfect. That is you right now. Let's keep this professional.
Absolutely right. How are you? You okay?
I'm okay. I'm not bad. Not bad. I feel tired too. A little bit. I had a few beers, but not too many yesterday. And then just weekend of looking after the kids, trying to do some exercise, watch the rugby.
Well, this is from Friday. I went out Friday. This isn't from last night. From Friday, I feel this bad. So we had the last weekend of the CrossFit Open in our box. Unfortunately, I do not think I've made the quarterfinals. I'm currently sat in the 73rd percentile.
Ooh.
Heartbreaking.
So it's 73rd percentile, so the way for you to be bumped up would be a lot of people scoring very badly.
Yeah, basically. But what happens is lots of good people put on their scores very late.
Very late, yeah, okay.
Brilliant, can't wait for that. So then we all went out and I got back in at 5 in the morning.
Wow.
Good old school drink.
Nice. On a Friday night as well.
Yeah.
Saturday morning, I guess.
Exactly right.
Superb.
So, and then I watched whole day's worth of rugby. How about you?
Well, I was at the real quiz yesterday. So I travelled only a maybe 20-minute walk to Heywood Road to go and watch Sale FC host my beloved Sedgley Park.
How did that
Sedgley
go?
Tigers. It was a good game. It was the classic game of two halves. Sedgley 17-7 up at halftime, lost 35-24.
Oh, God.
And the only points we scored, Sedgley scored, in the second half were basically the final play of the game. So they conceded 28-4 unanswered tries in the second half.
We've had a bit of a chat about this upstairs, but there were some notable players playing for Sale. Tom Brady,
playing 15.
Nice.
Fergus Mulcrone was playing in the centres. Matt Bradley, who used to play at Sedgley, number 9.
Do you know him?
He's a good lad. Good scrum half.
Okay.
Another ex-Sedge and filed player, Danny Birch, was on the... He was limping. I said hi to him very briefly.
Did Sale have the flanker who's got ridiculous hair playing? He's always got ridiculous hair. Like he's either pink or...
No, don't think so.
Did they... I mean, you'd have said if Nev Edwards was playing.
Nev Edwards was not playing. I would have been starstruck to see Nev. but no, Nev wasn't playing. Brady was the kind of main draw.
Really? So I really like their 10, James Robbins, I think he's class.
Yeah, they had a few good players. But Brady was the main draw because he is the biggest name. He stands out because of his grey hair. Mm-hmm. And he was playing as a Crash Ball 15.
Crash Ball 15, fascinating.
Which is like Butch James at playing 15.
Wow, high praise indeed. I remember watching him against Cambridge, and they lost to Cambridge, and obviously Cambridge have subsequently gone up, haven't they? Have I made that up?
I think they did go, yeah. I think it was about 2 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, and I was struck by how much he talks. Mm. His communication is excellent.
Well, the atmosphere was superb. So I didn't hear much talking just because it wasn't a full house, obviously, but it was heaving.
Really?
There must have been not far off 1,000 people in there, and probably at least 40% of those were Sedge fans.
So last time I was at Sale FC, I did not watch a game, but I came after the game. So I played for Tok H, and then I came after the game to meet my friend Ben. Mm-hmm. So he was up watching. Is Nick Easter Chinner?
I think he is.
Yeah. So I came up to meet Ben and say hello to Nick Easter, who was introduced to me through Ben. And it was rammed. The clubhouse was rammed. It felt like an absolute tremendous atmosphere there.
It was really good atmosphere. Everyone enjoyed themselves. Even the Sedgley fans, who Sedgley were soundly beaten in the second half. Very soundly beaten in the second half after looking good in the first half. But it was a really good day. And for me, it's a 20-minute walk. But kind of regardless, wherever you are in Manchester, it's 300 yards away from Brooklyn's tram stop. Yeah. So it's so easy to get to. So I saw loads and dozens of ex-Sedgley lads who I played with over the many, many years. And almost all of them were on the beers because they've got
wonderful.
The Met in Town or got the tram from Whitefield. So it was a good atmosphere.
So probably we should have said this at the start of the show. Where's Tim? We should have mentioned that he's not here.
Tim is not. He is on his way, he's assured us. But on his way to a Zoom feed to join us because he just kind of slipped in this afternoon.
Oh, he's off to meet Joe Worsley.
By the way, boys, I'm in Biarritz. The Biarritz DOR is putting us up, laying on food, and Joe Worsley arrives a bit later.
Oh, no, Joe Worsley's at your boys.
Bordeaux.
So hang on, when we decide to see a DOR from Paris, all hell breaks loose and there's not allowed to be a podcast. When he decides he wants to hang out with DORs, we have to steady the ship without him.
I think you know, JB, that is very, very different.
It's completely different. Completely different. Well, I hope he enjoys his time in France. I'm glad the pod guys wasn't compromised to accommodate his jaunt in France. Well, the king of YouTube will be joining us shortly, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, with that in mind, I don't want to talk about England because I want to hear Tim talk about England because he'll be very interested in that. But he might not be so interested in talking about Wales. So do you want to start there?
Well, so I've watched the highlights. I was keeping up with it live on my phone. But I was obviously paying great close attention to the biggest game, Sale FC versus Sedgley. Mm. So other than the highlights and the pattern of scoring, there's probably a lot of this game that I missed. So you can probably fill me in.
Well, I spent I watched the first half in great detail and the second half in less detail because I thought the first half basically told me everything that I need to know. And what I needed to know is exactly what I said last week. You know, the narrative on this Welsh team hasn't changed. They were disciplined, like they always are, but they started making mistakes. And I think this Welsh team cannot make any mistakes if they want to be even remotely competitive. And because they made mistakes and their set piece was terrible and everything else, I mean, there's just no way to consistently win with this group of players. I'm convinced.
If you've got no set piece, if your scrum is struggling, which it has significantly,
they were getting all battered. Tournament absolutely battered.
Yeah, and if your line-out is imperfect, their line-out is better than the scrum, but their scrum is woeful, really, really poor.
Yeah,
then it's you are going to struggle. Right, you can't win international rugby games without a scrum.
Yeah, and not to go over exactly what I said last week, but I will do anyway. I sat there and I was watching this game with a friend of mine from CrossFit who likes his sport but isn't necessarily into rugby, but he knows a lot, enough about sport in general to be asking the right questions. He's like, what do you like about that guy? Well, that guy's great, but he's 7 kilograms too small. What about that guy? Phenomenal player. 7 kilograms too small. That one? Well, there's something else going on there. 7 kilograms too small. So it just goes throughout the team. Now, the only, I mean, man for man, they were just outclassed. There's just no other way to put this. And this is Italy. And I thought that, I mean, I think they were hoping that they'd get by on reputation, like, like national history. I can't see how else they thought that they'd win this. Now, you do see in their style of play a team that are trying everything. And you know, there's only so many times you can say this, but I really admire how they stick to their task. But they're just not able to do it. They're just not good enough.
Is it? So, with this team, obviously the front row is a major problem.
Huge.
And then the front row, if those guys get enough, is it a case of those guys get more experience, they will get better, or are they simply not good enough?
Well, I think
they're not good enough right now. We know that, but can they? Have they got the foundations to be good enough in the front row?
Do you know what I think they're looking for? I think they're looking for a Samson Lee or a Thomas Francis.
I mean, either of those players in their pomp, they would kill for.
Forget their pomp, right? Because that's not going to happen, right? If there was a Thomas Francis in his pomp or a Samson Lee in his pomp, we wouldn't be having this discussion.
Yeah.
So they're looking for one
who will be that. Yeah.
And just, I mean, look at the guys that they've brought into the team, the Six Nations. I think I'm the next guy up. I think
you can scrimmage.
I can sense it. The Six Nations, if they included Georgia and went to, you know, Seven Nations as one extra game, I would be getting the call up.
Because the reason I ask that is because elsewhere in the team, they've got guys like Winnett or Rio Dyer or Mann or Dafydd Jenkins, who are, I think those boys, with the right experience, they're so inexperienced right now, but they've all got lots of talent.
Loads of talent. And talent's not a problem.
In all those other positions, I don't think talent, it's just that they're on the inexperience scale. In the front row, I think it's both. They don't have the talent and they don't have the experience.
Well, just let's talk about Winnett. Is that how you say his name? Is it Winnett? I heard the comment say Winnett.
Whatever.
Winnett, right? I mean, again, good player. Do you know who he reminds me of more than anyone else in the Premiership?
Premiership. He reminds me a little bit of Josh Hodge, Exeter.
Nailed it.
Really?
Yeah, young Josh Hodge.
Yeah. Josh Hodge is not particular. He's about 22, isn't he, or 23?
Yeah. So, just obviously a good player. Oh, hang on. Tim's here. It's like magic. Tim Cocker appears. How are you, mate?
JB, Phil, how you doing? I'm very well, thank you very much.
Good. Good to hear you.
Now, you're going to have to just jump into this discussion. We've not been going long. We're talking about Wales and their inability to play rugby, and we're currently talking about little Cam Winnett, which...
Poor little lad.
Yes, and he is tiny. So this is the point I was going to make. I was looking at him, and he's tiny. He's absolutely tiny. Like, he's small on the shoulders. I know it's not the most important thing in the world, but it must be important to somebody.
Can I flip that around and just say he may be one of the bravest men on earth? Him and from Phil's beloved Ulster, Mike Lowry.
Yeah.
Incredibly brave men.
This is exactly what David Flatman says about George Ford. He says he's the bravest player because he's only small, and he is small. And he takes the ball to the line every single time and he gets whacked.
Mm. I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, I think it's a great point.
And Winnett, it was the England game, he put in a hell of a tackle on Elliot Daly, 5 yards from the line.
Yeah, he did.
Put his body on the line. And Daly's not an enormous winger, but he's still 10, 12 kilograms, like a stone and a half, close to 2 stone, heavier than Winnett.
Yeah. I think the other side of this coin is how good Italy were. Lamora was class. Lamora was absolutely class. I thought Brex again. In fact, both the centres were... they give him so much go forward.
Brex and...
Best centre pairing in this year's Six Nations tournament? Question mark.
Would you swap him for Ringrose and Henshaw, if you could?
Ringrose wasn't there, though. This is what I mean. Yeah. It was Aki and Henshaw.
It was Ringrose this week.
It was Aki and Henshaw for this tournament. Ringrose came off the bench on the wing.
Did he not start on the weekend? Have I made that up?
No, Henshaw. Yeah, he only came back. I think this is the first game that he came onto the bench for.
I'm sure I saw him. I did see him play then.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
He came off the bench and played on the wing.
Okay, good. Okay, would you... Aki and Henshaw?
Aki and Henshaw. In terms of overall performance, Aki's playing amazingly at the moment. He's had a phenomenal 12 months. But I might go. I mean, shall we save this for a little bit later and maybe pick the team of the tournament?
I hate picking teams of the tournament.
I can't wait to make JB do it now. He hates it. That's going to make me enjoy doing it all the more.
What about Hugh Jones and Tupolotto? They're a quality pair of operators.
Well, that's true, but then we missed Tupolotto for the last couple of games.
Yeah, because of his injury.
But he makes things tick.
They're a lovely partnership. But we can have this debate in some detail when we pick team of the tournament.
Yeah.
But Italy have, like, they've really impressed me this year.
Particularly after their garbage World Cup.
And their World Cup, with almost the same squad of players, the World Cup was truly garbage.
Yeah. Well, except for Menoncello, who maybe he is worth 100 points.
Maybe.
Yes.
He's class. But they've had some injuries and come through as well.
Like, so they drew against France. What was the game they were very close?
Well, they beat Scotland.
Beat Wales. Drew against France.
They looked good against England as well. They scored, I think, three very good tries against England.
They were ahead, were they not?
I think they were ahead in the first half. And then England, it looked closer at the end because England were about 8 or 9 points clear and Italy scored with the final play. But they put in a good performance against England as well.
Yeah, three wins for them would have been absolutely amazing.
I
don't wish to be negative. I just want to talk about the absolute talentless mess, which is the post-match interviewing of whoever did the interviews for Italy. And was the carrier the BBC?
I couldn't tell you.
Yes, it was.
Oh my God. They need shooting, Tim. Can you hold seminars on how to do interviews like post-game? Because they are clueless. I'm trying to remember who it was that was doing it. A team has just won, right? A team has just won in Italy. Not only have they just won, probably their best ever Six Nations draw and two wins. I think it's their best Six Nations ever.
It's certainly the best for at least 10 years.
I think,
if not longer,
it is rude and probably more than a little bit disrespectful, as well as untalented, to be asking the captain questions like, is it great not to get the wooden spoon this year? What are you on about, you idiot? Like, you should be talking about how great they played and, you know, what it means to them to be here. Not, do you remember being terrible last year? So historically you're terrible. Is it great not to be so terrible? How does it feel not to be so terrible?
To finish second bottom.
Who was it? Sonia McLaughlin. That's who it was. Sonia McLaughlin. Honestly, who runs? Do they practice? Tim, you know the answer to this. Do they actually practice?
Without getting into too specific a conversation, judging my contemporaries, which I wish I wouldn't do.
I'll judge them for you.
I respect all my fellow professionals, but yes, you would have meeting. You would have a sit down on the catering bus probably before a game or in the media.
And what
room
was she doing? Eating
with your producer and or director and the fellow team. And well, partly because you sort of go, oh, you know, what's the story of today? This is certainly in the before match stuff. In the post match stuff, I think it's down to actually the producer may nudge you in one direction or another. But in my case, I think because I generally would be left to do what I wanted to do.
Am I wrong in thinking it's just a complete lack of class? A complete lack of class to not congratulate the team, but just remind them how terrible they've been for their remaining history.
So my thought philosophy on what your job is in that situation is to ask the questions that to reveal the answers that people watching would want to know the answers to.
Yeah.
So that's why I actually think ex players don't make the best reporters, generally speaking, because you might be able to analyse a game and break that down really well, but actually you just need to kind of sort of imagine, what are people sitting on their sofa thinking right now? What are they feeling?
Do you know what
do they want to know? I know. And actually, I would want to harness the raw emotion of Italy's best ever Six Nations performance.
Unless you're Welsh, everybody watching that was thinking, that is amazing for Italy. Mm. What an outstanding performance by a good bunch of boys. Not can we remember how bad you want... I mean, what gets me is not so much the questions, but the fact that, will this be analysed? Like, do they look back and go, yeah, this was terrible, never do that again?
So for example, here's a question. I didn't actually hear any of the post-match interviews from this, but I'd want to kind of dig into, if I had Michele Lamaro, I'd want to know, is this just that you've got the best bunch of players that Italy have ever had, or is there something else going on? Because you've got the Casada factor, you've got I don't know, what is it about this group? You've been in squads where you haven't done well. What makes this group really special? Is it just purely the talent that you've got, or is there something else?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and to winning in Cardiff, I think they've done it before, but not for a long time. They've definitely drawn in Cardiff. Whether they've won in Cardiff, I don't know.
I think they might have won a couple of years ago, actually,
mate. Yeah, they might have.
But it's the best ever tournament they've had. They won two and drew one.
And they should have beaten France. Like, they had a kick on the 80th minute to win that game. And if they hadn't done some crazy things in their own half in the first half of the France game, they could have actually won it comfortably.
And also, Italy beat Scotland, who beat England, who beat Ireland, meaning that...
Oh, my word.
Meaning that Italy are Six Nations champions, but in Dean Ryan logic.
Or World Cup quarter-finalists.
Yeah. quite incredible stuff. I was about to say something. Yes, the other story to come out of this, I think, is really interesting, is Gatland offering his resignation in the change room. Now, it doesn't sound like it's that sincere.
To then be joking about it 10 minutes afterwards.
Yeah, but he did offer his resignation, apparently.
The bit that Gatland was actually disappointed was that he was told, no, please.
Yeah.
Release me.
You're going nowhere.
if you want to buy your way out of your contract, you can do.
We actually really appreciate it right now. Oh, no.
Do you think maybe that was it? Gatland was doing a, like, the whole premise of the theatre show, the producers, is trying to put on the worst possible theatre show you can, because they actually realise you can make more money by having a flop than a success. But actually it ends up being a success as a result.
I'm not sure that the last part of the producer's narrative has fed through to this Wales team, sadly. I don't know if he's serious or not. It sounds like something he said, knowing his job is very, very secure and he's under no pressure. I think that's why he said it. I still think he's 100% the right guy. Nobody's doing better than what he's done with this team. And even after this performance, I don't look at it and go, oh, right, okay. If only they kept Pivac, or if only, I don't know, Rob Baxter was in charge, they'd have won it. I don't think any of those things.
If only Rob Howley hadn't had an unfortunate gambling incident.
Yeah, exactly.
Still been there.
500 unfortunate gambling incidents.
Each more unfortunate than the last.
For very small amounts of money.
Yeah, almost entirely inconsequential amounts of money.
Can I just say, I am delighted that he's back. Not because I rate him as a coach. I know others do. I don't. But it doesn't matter. I'm just delighted to see him get a second chance for something so stupid.
Yeah.
Like, so many people make a mistake and don't get a second chance for things which are kind of inconsequential and made no material harm. They were definitely right to get rid of him, but I'm so glad that he's back and he does get a second chance.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But yeah, there's nobody else, I think, in the world who can take on this Welsh team. We saw it with Pivac, who wasn't a bad coach. I don't think there's anyone good enough, really. No one's going to be good enough to make this team win consistently.
Time is the only thing. Like, it's getting they have, as we listed before, probably just before you joined, Tim, there are some seriously talented boys in that team who are very, very inexperienced, who will get better with the experience. The question for me that I asked JB before, and I don't think we got to a conclusive answer, is, well, maybe we did, but it was a negative one. In the front row, We know in lots of positions you've got inexperienced guys who have bags of talent, like Mann, like Winner, like David Jenkins, like Rio Dyer, list goes on. In the front row, they have no experience, but do they have the talent? Do you think this group, and it's a wide group because of just the sheer number of players who got blooded, do you think in 2 years' time or even 3 years' time in the next World Cup cycle, or at the end of this World Cup cycle, they can have a competitive front row from the players that they've got?
Competitive would mean not getting battered every week. Potentially serviceable. The hookers seem to be there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
Derry Lake didn't see the field, and neither did... what's the other boy called? Jack Morgan, actually. So they didn't have either their co-captains playing. But yeah, the front row question. I think they're going to carry on trying, lads, until they find a third-string prop from Doncaster or somewhere, or someone in an academy somewhere that can prop up a scrum. And that's all. That's why they went for Archie Griffin.
Yeah.
You know, they're just looking at every single option they've got, and that's what Gatland's got to do. I think he's going to have to scour the globe. The problem you've got with Wales, right, just say if they do scour the globe and they find someone like Ed, who is the Irish lad who's not Irish, came over from Crusaders.
But he is Irish, though.
Is he?
Ollie Jaeger is Irish, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, is he actually Irish?
He's actually Irish, yeah. With, I think it's Dutch lineage.
Was he? Oh, I thought he was a New Zealander.
He's Black Rock.
I thought he grew up in Ireland and then went off to New Zealand.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure he was Black Rock. And then he was one of the academies. I think it must have been Leinster Academy, but didn't quite make it. Then went off to New Zealand and made his way to the Crusaders.
Well, sorry for misunderstanding your situation, Mr. Jaeger. But say if there is someone in Super Rugby who, like a Gareth Anscombe, right? Are you going to tell me that he went to Llandovery now, aren't you, and went there?
Right. Anscombe, he was the 10 in 2013 or 2012, something like that. He was the 10 for Bowden Barrett's under-20s team.
So if there is
someone... By the way, maybe it is Gloucester's year next year, signing Gareth Anscombe.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if you can get him fit, he's a good player.
So if they can find that, what are they going to do? Are they going to tempt him with the Dragons? Are they going to tempt him with Ospreys? I mean, the Welsh domestic game is in such a mess. I don't see how they get that player with Welsh lineage over. And if the domestic system isn't producing them, they're in one hell of a problem. So they've just got to hope and pray that there's someone playing in the English league somewhere or in an academy somewhere who is Welsh qualified who they can steal. Mm. I think that's their best option.
Just on Ollie Jaeger, he was actually born in England, in London, to an Irish mother and a Dutch father. His father, Harm Jaeger, was a Harm Jaeger, strength and conditioning coach who represented Netherlands men's water polo team.
Of course he did. Who's the most famous Jaeger that comes to your mind?
I played with a South African utility back called Arnos de Jaeger. Cut. He was a good Jaeger.
Mm-hmm.
Lude de Jaeger?
Oh, that's a de Jaeger. Jaeger. We want Jaegers. Tim, any Jaegers?
Meister.
Jaegermeister, yeah.
Jaegermeister, yeah. I was thinking of Chuck Jaeger, the World War II ace. And very famous test pilot.
Jaeger went to, in 2013, so he would have been 18. So he was Black Rock, and then he travelled to New Zealand aged 18 to attend the Crusaders International High Performance Unit, and then the Crusaders Academy.
Yeah, nice.
Wales just need to change their eligibility rules to include people that aren't Welsh, don't have Welsh grandparents, and just ones that they can slip a bit of paper to. Sign that form and you're Welsh. That'll do.
Yes. They could do with a little bit of that.
Just so you know, Chuck Jaeger was also the first guy to exceed the speed of sound in level flight.
Good knowledge.
So not,
good knowledge.
Not doing a dive bomb or something similar.
Yep, just level flight exceeded the sound barrier. And also, I didn't realise this, he only died in 2020 after fighting World War II, Korean War and the Vietnam War.
Wow.
I was only wondering that. I'm glad you filled that in. I was wondering about that.
A lot of people probably were, actually.
just before we go on, seeing as we mentioned the Crusaders, did you see my beloved Hurricanes beat the Crusaders in their own backyard?
I did not see it.
Crusaders cannot buy a win. The double dongs keep losing.
4-0. They've lost 4 out of 4, their worst ever start to Super Rugby.
Who's their coach now?
Don't know. Not Scott Robinson.
Even worse than Todd Blackadder.
Impossible. No, so the Blackadder thing is being superficially good. So like you've got to win them all except for maybe like the important ones towards the end.
Yeah.
You've got to sort of ride the talent and just not really contribute much. Not just lose outright.
In terms of wins against the form book, I saw Didsbury got a good win away at Tarleton.
Yes, unfortunately I couldn't play because I've hurt my shoulder. So, yeah, that was a tough one.
Did you hurt your shoulder in 24.3?
No, so thankfully there's thrusters, but my shoulder is wrecked when it comes out because I did it against Broughton Park.
Ooh.
So it's kind
in of... In the CrossFit Games, did you manage to get your muscle-ups out, JB?
Yes, I got 8 muscle-ups in total. So,
oh, mate, that's great.
It's all right. I think I got 80...
Mate, that's really good.
81st...
That's really good.
81st percentile in that one. But I was just telling Phil before, I got 73rd overall, which means I'm 2 percentage points off, because there's no lift, was there?
Mm.
So...
No. Although for a lot of people, 60 kegs is a relatively heavy thruster.
But it's not a one-rep max thruster.
Not a one-rep max thruster, no. Yeah, so, mate, that's good going. 81st percentile is very good going.
Well, I've been happier. Although, do you know, I do qualify for the quarter... For the quarter... Not semi-final, the quarter-finals. If I decide to do age-limited. But that breaks my heart, and I don't want to do it. I'm in the 80s.
On principle, you're not... Yeah, you're not willing to go there yet.
It's called the Open. Right? It's Open. It's not like... I don't like it. And you can do all these leaderboards, so you can like be the best in the police, or I'm probably not even the best IFA.
I think all of our mutual friend, actually, we've all played with him, Wilco. I think he said he was the best British teacher aged 40 to 45, yeah, or something
you
like that.
Teachers leagues and all sorts.
Surely, well, so
top three,
you're not the best IFA. Does that mean you've been beaten by Beardmore,
yeah,
or Beardmore?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my brother Richard would have no chance of being beaten. Chris is an athlete. He can do, I think he can do 5K in about 18 minutes, I think.
Yeah, I'd have a look. So I looked at his time. His 10K, his best recorded on Strava is only about 42.
No, he's got below 40 for 10.
Not on, so it's not recorded on, yeah, Strava.
Maybe it's more like 42 then. But yeah, he's definitely about 18 for 5.
He's not been Phil, the little Strava stalker.
Oh yeah, I do like to know if someone's a good runner. I like to know.
Got to know. It's a running thing, isn't it?
How good actually are they?
Yeah. So he might be able to beat me in something. But the thing is, Tim, as you'll know, I don't want to talk about it. There was no lift this year, and it really messed me up because I know that's points in the bag there.
I agree. If I hadn't had a really bad back and actually been able to do it, I think I'd have done quite well this year. But anyway, so. Next year.
There's always next year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Another year older, another year weaker.
I know. Christ.
Yeah, so Chris is 5K, 18.31.
There you go.
He's a 18. Very good time. He's 10K, 41.33.
Reasonable.
I don't even bother comparing. Like, in my family, I'm never going to be the best at running, because
or rugby.
No, also, I can't be the best at rugby. That's my brother.
Your brother, and probably your son in about 12 months' time.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
falling
fair
down
well.
The rankings.
They're in the Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park under 16s are in, not only in the final of the Lancashire Cup today. They beat the winners of the Cheshire Cup.
Oh really?
Mm.
Yeah.
Who were the winners? Macclesfield or someone?
Lim.
Oh,
Wilmslow,
yeah, okay.
Lim beat Wilmslow in the final. Fair, and then Broughton Park beat Lim. So,
super.
By Dean Ryan logic.
Double champs.
Soon to be double champs.
Soon, yeah.
Well, yeah. Let's wait and see.
So, yeah, I think there's not really much to be said more about Wales. The secret to Wales getting better has to be a better domestic league, hasn't it? I mean, they've got to be producing more players.
Just on that, shall I read out an email? Without going too far into the weeds, but Toby Jones, contact@edchasers.gmail.com. He says, I've long been against reducing the number of professional teams in Welsh rugby, but on the back of this wooden spoon and all the Welsh teams struggling in the URC, it feels like this is the perfect catalyst for change. I propose merging senior playing and coaching staff of Cardiff and Dragons and Scarlets and Ospreys, have both teams play out of Cardiff, but play 3 games at each other's venue. then offer fans affordable subsidised travel to get to the location of their disbanded teams.
Why subsidised travel? Why?
Well, yeah, actually, I don't...
Throw it in the bin. If you want to go, pay for it.
I understand what he's saying. He's saying we need to... But actually, I think the point is when you look at the crowds at Ospreys and Dragons and stuff, there's not that many people anyway. So yes, there might be a few disgruntled people, but maybe thinking bigger picture. I mean, I can totally understand that why a lot of Wales fans would love to see a British and Irish league. It would benefit the Welsh teams probably more than anybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's tough, isn't it? They're always messing around with the... I actually think they're on to a good thing with the URC now. They've messed around with that competition over and over, and finally...
I think two teams, though, in Wales, a bit like Scotland. Wales should go for the Scotland model, not rather than the Irish model.
Yeah, but team reduction is fine, but I don't think they would benefit jumping out of the URC, which has finally got its act together, and then into
I agree with you. They could just get rid of all the eligibility laws, though.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
That would be one of the best things they could do.
Yeah.
So, with the two teams, I like the principle of... consolidation and getting cohesion by players playing together regularly, and you increase the strength. The only problem in Wales is part of the mess that you've got right now is because of the merging of teams 25 years ago at the dawn of professionalism.
Talking about,
so
yeah.
You'd have to do it. You would almost have to dissolve everything and restart afresh with no links to any of the historic clubs.
I think that maybe that's it. It's East and West. It's South Wales. You just say, sorry, North Wales, you're not getting a team. East and West on the South.
Yeah, I've got to say, it's all very well for us to say this is what Welsh rugby should do. Trying to understand Welsh rugby and what motivates it and drives it, it's a little bit like sort of trying to describe to somebody how Labour Party leaders get picked and all the factions in that. It's like, it's a bit of trade unions, there's a bit of the hard left, there's a bit, you know, it's a
maybe
huge...
Maybe we should ask Mark Drakeford what they should do with Welsh rugby.
Well, funnily enough, I know a Tory MP, and it's not the Tory MP that you know, Phil.
You know a different one.
Yeah, I know one, and he's based, I won't tell you where he's based, but well, he's based in Wales, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I asked him, like, why don't you go to rugby? Why don't you go and watch the local team? And he goes, no, because the RFU is so entrenched with the Labour Party.
The WRU.
Sorry, the WRU, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I didn't follow up that with any further questions, which is unlike me, but I thought, God, that's interesting, to the point that if you're considered a politician, you probably don't go to a Wales game.
You've just reminded me, actually, as well as going to a grassroots rugby game this weekend, just gone, I'm going to one next weekend. I've been invited to Glossop.
Have you got that invite?
Well, through the High Peak Conservative MP. That's why you reminded me of it.
Right, JB, you should go along with Phil to Glossop, because that is the local club of Kit Brammer, who we used to play with at Broughton Park, and now I coach with at Manchester Metropolitan University.
Is he back at Glossop, is he?
Yeah.
Mm. I've always liked Kit.
Oh, he's not a coach there. That's just his local club.
Oh, right, okay. You mean he lives close to it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fine.
You'll find him there on a Saturday afternoon.
Very, 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 very nice man.
Yeah, lovely man.
What was I going to say about Glossop? Oh, no, we've also been invited to... we've got an open invitation to go to Blackburn as well, which I'd love to do.
I'd quite fancy going to Blackburn.
I would.
Do you know what? Can I tell you about an invitation I had?
Yes.
I get invited to Glossop, you get invited to Blackburn. You are invited to... yachts, to parties in the south of France, all sorts of things, Tim Cocker. Well, so please tell us.
Tim is good.
No, that's actually not.
So close to high society now. He's probably
devastated.
I wasn't
trying to say where I am now, although I can happily go there if you want to. But what I was going to say is, because I've got this trip to South Africa coming up in a few months' time for the Ireland South Africa game, there is an under-18s tournament happening called Craven Week. Which is the name is Doc Craven, this kind of legendary figure in South African schoolboy and youth rugby, and just coaching in general. So it's called Craven Week, and it's where the best under-18s players all get together, and you will always see some future box in this tournament. Anyway, so I'm going along, and it's at Monument School in Krugersdorp near Pretoria, and the local rugby club are called Old Witbull. And it's basically the old boys for the school. And I had no idea how big schools rugby was in South Africa. It's like
huge.
College football in America.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Anyway, they're basically the offers I'm getting at the minute are things like, this is genuinely an offer that I got the other day. It was like, oh, by the way, when you if you've got a rest day while you're there, we'd love to take you to a game reserve, and it, you know, if you fancy shooting a wildebeest or an impala.
Yes. Yes. Do you say yes?
Well, I mean, if I kill it, I want to eat it. Otherwise, I don't think it's the right thing to do. So
no, just bury it.
If I can eat it, then I'll kill it.
Yeah, good. Although, I guess if you kill an impala in South Africa, other things will eat it anyway.
That's true.
So it's not complete waste. You'll be all right. I
circle of life and all that. I don't feel good about just shooting something for fun.
Although if you accidentally have fun whilst shooting it, that's okay. God, you're so close to high society now, Tim. You must be gutted that Epstein's no longer a thing. You'd be like on the reserve list by now. Oh dear. Right. Well, we deliberately did this, Tim, because you hadn't joined us, but we held off talking about England because we thought you'd like to kick it off and tell us what you saw and all the rest of it. No, he's gone.
Is he actually gone?
Do you think the
Epstein gag was too much?
Do you think the security services heard that?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hello. Hello.
Oh, thank God you're back.
Sorry, what did you hear? What was the last thing you heard?
You not responding to me making a gag about Jeffrey Epstein. So we'll just move on from that.
I'm only going to mention where I am because there's a potential little... I want to see if you can guess the player that I met tonight, former player, that I think Phil may have played with.
Ooh.
Oh, hold on. It's not working again.
Yeah, we can hear you.
We can hear you.
You can hear me.
Okay, I'm going to go say Tim Molnar.
Okay, so sorry. So I don't know what you've said about where I am. I'm currently at the home of the Biarritz director of rugby, looks after all the business operations.
Hang on a minute. Lovely man. Hang on. You have no shame. You're a baron.
Wait.
Go on.
Wait, and I'm here because he is friends with the guy who has orchestrated this, Joe Worsley.
Mm-hmm.
World Cup winner,
yeah,
European champion, Premiership champion, but someone who once played for a club round here came to dinner tonight, and I had a chat with him and his wife, and they're lovely. And I think I've got a feeling Phil may have played with him.
I think I know who you're talking about.
I'm gonna say Magnus Lund.
The wrong one.
Ah, yes, the bigger Lund,
Eric Lund.
Eric Lund.
Correct. Did you play with him, Phil?
I did, yes. Briefly, I was about 18 when he played for Sedge. So I played a couple of preseason games and trained. I did a few preseasons with him as well.
Interesting.
So yeah, played a few games. He was enormous, absolutely enormous. I remember being preseason. We were up in the Lake District. God, this is about maybe 2003-04.
Mm-hmm.
We're up in the Lake District doing training, trained at Ambleside Rugby Club, and then went out to Grisdale Forest to do some training as well, and then barbecue, a few beers, bit of team building. And the Sunday morning, had a few beers, got woke up at 6 a.m. and taken into Grisdale Forest, and they had these piles of logs, like chopped down trees.
Mm-hmm.
These things were 3-4 metres long, half a metre thick, and we were told to get into pairs, and you had an obstacle course to get these logs round. And one of the worst moments of my life was I was on one end at maybe 5'8", maybe not even that, with Magnus Lund on the other end, 6'7", 6'8". Eric Lund at the other end with 6'7", 6'8", and all of the weight is just down on top of me.
Beautiful.
It was horrible.
So Dean's going to tell us quite a nice story. Obviously, him and Magnus Lund played together in Sale.
Mm.
And he said, when Toulouse played Biarritz in top 14, they lined up and they were both captains of their respective side. Is that? Who would have thought this?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Eric Lund is doing something very interesting and topical at the minute. He is...
He was a computer programmer.
Yes, he was a computer programmer, is a computer programmer. He has put that technology to use in a rugby context, something that's been in the news during the Six Nations.
Hang on. Is he working with Capgemini?
No.
Because they sponsor Beer Itz.
Ah.
I don't know what they do. Maybe he does in some form.
I think they're a big computer service firm.
Quite possibly, actually. But no, he is involved in a piece of technology which has been in the news during the Six Nations.
The mouthpiece?
Mouth guards.
Correct. He is the guy behind the G-Force mouth guard detectors.
Interesting. Did you get any info? Gossip of what is the data telling him or will be telling us?
I can't say where I got this bit of information from, obviously. This is just me completely plucking a bit of information out of the air. Mm. But you know in the England-France game when Ben Earl gave away a penalty right at the end of the game?
Mm.
Yeah.
Which was, I've got no basis on which to say this whatsoever, but to me, it looked like Ben Earl may have taken a big shot a big G-force shock just before making the illegal tackle.
Interesting.
He looked like he was staggering around like someone who just had a big shot. Because it was definitely illegal. He definitely deserved to be penalised for that tackle. No arms.
Well, let's come back to that and have a think about how you're going to square the idea of being a bit Bayon fan and also dining out with Beer Itz. And we'll come back to it.
That is sacrilege.
Isn't it?
Well, tomorrow I'm going to be having a chat with Facundo
Cordero.
The Argentinian hooker, forget his name. And I'm going to be having a chat with Benders tomorrow. Benders!
Ah. Where's he?
He's coaching at Bayon.
Excellent.
And speaking to Patrice Lagisque as well.
Don't know him.
Coach of Portugal, most recently. But
I do know him now.
He's a former player of Bayon, former coach of Bayon, but he was also coach of Beer Itz when they won the European Cup.
That's absolutely fascinating.
That is really cool.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to some excellent YouTube content. It will go on YouTube, will it? Or it'll be all background.
But I can't discuss where and how this will be. And the reason I'm here is kind of sort of to be confirmed and to be revealed.
Well, how mysterious.
Fascinating.
I'll tell you on what's... I'll fill you boys in, but I just... Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know what I can or cannot say at this point.
Well, I know what you can say. You can give me your breakdown on England. Go.
Awesome game. If this game was a week ago, I would have been delighted at the outcome. As it was, I was really a little bit frustrated by the result. But overall, really happy with how England are having a crack. And just, I don't know why I felt defensive of George Ford, but I was really pissed off at the number of England fans that were saying George Ford needs to be put out to pasture and Marcus Smith needs to be put at 10. George Ford was absolutely amazing.
Was this last week when people were saying that?
Yeah. Yeah, after I think last week.
Yeah, so there was one article, wasn't there, in the Telegraph that basically echoed that. Oliver Brown, who I just assume doesn't know what he's talking about.
And loads of comments online, mate. Tons of them.
So I've avoided the online... Well, I just don't frequent there now. So I don't know what was said, but for me... That was a very uneducated thing to be saying because, yes, he's missing kicks, but you don't beat Ireland without that consistent pressure. And I thought this game against France, he just turned it on again. He runs that attack so nicely now.
He gets flatter and flatter to the line.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's the point you made before about one of the bravest players.
Mm.
He takes the ball so flat, knowing he's going to get hit, but he creates opportunities for others. And his range of kicking is superb as well.
It does feel... I know England fans are not going to be happy with the result. And England's defence has been very good, but they've leaked 33 points. The point of the game is to win. We all know it's to win. But in lots of ways, I thought this was an even better result than the Ireland result, particularly from an attacking point of view. I thought the attack, it seems... They look like they know what they're doing.
They do. In patches again, I think. And I say that because... Well, they scored three of their four tries in a six-minute period, either side of half-time. And without that six-minute period, it would have been a different game.
Yeah.
But overall, England in the World Cup, they were a kind of blunt tool because in the time that was available, it was all that Borthwick could do.
Yeah.
It was the right assessment and it was the right... it gave them the best shot of doing well in the World Cup and they did better than everyone expected. Now I think you are starting to see kind of what Borthwick and the people around him can do with the talent that's there, because they are a seriously talented team.
Mm.
It's just giving them time, and
I think
they're on the right path.
I think the removal of Farrell has helped enormously.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You would always say that.
But hear me out.
I disagree. The mentality of the whole team has completely changed. And you look at the way Saracens played.
Exactly.
Farrell used to get loads of stick with Saracens when they played pragmatic box kick, pressure, chase. But then Farrell was part of a Saracens team that won the Premiership playing, like scoring a record number of tries.
Hear me out. Right?
Go on.
I'd say the same if George Ford had retired. It's removed all the uncertainty now.
Yes, so I take, well, not all of the uncertainty, but yeah, a massive chunk of the uncertainty. I take that point.
You don't have to think about how do we get him in the team or how do we get George Ford in the team. That conversation is now over. And the centres have sort of matured a bit more now. And maybe that was the problem, just continual chopping and changing, trying to find out what the right combination was. Whereas someone like Wales for the longest time or Scotland have never had that luxury. So you just start with whoever you've got and best of luck, and eventually they form into a really nice partnership. Ollie Lawrence at 12 was not my pick. I would not have done it. But he looks like he is the future now. I mean, I knew he was the future.
But then again, exactly as you've talked about before, JB, like last week against Ireland, he popped up on the wing and scored a try. And this time his first try was outside Henry Slade.
Yeah. Well, like, just letting those two
so
work together.
There is a bit of fluidity. And when you, I suppose, when you have consistency in selection, then it means you can play about with the shapes that you actually put there on the field.
Yeah. And a huge amount of credit has got to go to Henry Slade again, who is playing really unselfish rugby and brilliant rugby, which is allowing Lawrence to do all of the great things that he's doing. But he looks like such an important player now.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, which I'm going to give myself credit for this, at the start of the World Cup, just before the World Cup, we were trying to pick our back row. And Orthodoxy said, more heavy traffic carriers, yada, 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 yada. And the one thing I think we all agreed on was, you've just got to pick Ben Earl. It doesn't matter where you pick him.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to pick him.
6, 7, or 8, he has to be playing.
He is just world class. Like, I know we don't like that moniker. He is world class.
He is.
And if you want an idea of how good he is, I would say that Aldrich would be named as probably the world's best number 8 for a long time, or one of them.
Yeah, with Surveyor.
Savia would be number 1 with Aldrich and Doris just behind.
Yeah. Yes, I'd go for that.
Well, just check out Aldrich's stats. He was completely outplayed by Ben Earl. Completely.
Yes.
Now, they're slightly different players, but
he outplayed Doris last week.
Yeah, he's so
back
dynamic.
To back.
He makes more metres, he breaks the line more. He's just brilliant. He's just absolutely brilliant.
He top tackled on top stats on tackles as well.
Really?
19 tackles.
Good Lord.
Including the match-losing tackle. Mm. But he did top the tackles
as
well as
I think we also have to give some credit to Stuart Barnes here, because that break he made before Marcus Smith's try was very centre-esque.
From 12, yeah. I did. I must note that, who was it that said it? It might have been Wigglesworth, actually. people outside the England camp need to stop taking credit for England performances, which was a direct shot at Sir Clive Woodward.
What did Clive Woodward actually say?
He said something along the lines of, England must have read my column in the Daily Mail.
Good God.
Because of the way they played.
Right, I think we...
Hey, boys, have you seen this? Just pass it around.
Yeah. I think we actually, and I think rightly, criticised Richard Wigglesworth and Steve Borthwick for England's attack. And I think equally, whilst it's easy, and Ben Earl last week was like, yeah, see, apparently we're the worst team in the world. I'm still trying to find the journalist who said England were the worst England team ever that Ben Earl alluded to. Whatever fires him up, I guess. But I think legitimate criticism is fine. And I think England's attack was justified being legitimately criticised. But and Richard Wigglesworth as well as an attack coach. So I think that was justified before. But I do think the flip side has to be true. You have to say fair play, Wiggy.
Yeah, I agree. Well, on the press thing, if they're constantly told, don't read the press, they're all abusing you and no one reads the press, you can effectively tell these boys whatever you want. And that's exactly the way that I would go about this. I would say, don't read the press, boys. It's not good for you. However, I need to tell you this. It's not comfortable. But you're the worst attack in the world, according to the journalists. And it's no wonder they've got these massive mental issues about, you know, chips on their shoulder, and they're just very confused about what people are writing.
So you'd be doing... like wartime propaganda.
100%. Don't read any news. All news comes through me, and I'd be like, I'd be editing headlines on the on like team meetings and all sorts.
Brilliant.
So I think that's probably where it's all come from.
So, it was a wild game, though, wasn't it? Absolutely bonkers, that match.
It was a brilliant game.
It was a brilliant game.
As an England fan, I really, really wanted England to win, but I'm kind of more positive after this, because we weren't going to win the tournament. That ship had sailed. But the positives we have seen over the course of the tournament have been great. So, and this performance in France to score four tries to three, and it was the kicking of Ramos that was the difference. His four penalties versus George Ford's one. Although George Ford did have 100% off the boot and Ramos did not. I feel positive and buoyant about England again for the first time in probably a few years.
Yeah, the back row of the scrum look like they just need more time together and just going to get better and better and better. So that's sorted.
Again, just Chesham looks like potentially world class. I didn't think anyone could fill the breach left by Courtney Laws.
No, but that's not.
I don't ever think it's the breach left by Courtney Laws that's the problem. I think that's easily filled. I think, in terms of finding a six, not an issue. The one which you've never replaced, really, for me, is George Cruz. And I think, finally, you've got a big body in there, in Martin or Chesham, or a mixture of Martin and Chesham, to overcome that.
I think it is the combination. The three of them, because Marrow is playing superb as well at the moment. The three of those kind of...
But I would say, I don't think that is... a factor you can look at in isolation. I think Marrow is playing better because of the presence of, like, Martin just going around smashing rucks, speeding up ball. He just frees up Marrow to do what he does.
I think you're exactly right. It's the three of them playing together. I think it's a really, really nice combination. And then having those three big bodies, or certainly the two very big bodies in Martin and Chesham, allows you to have some slightly smaller bodies in Ben Earl and Underhill, who do a hell of a lot of work as well.
Yeah, and they're now just destructive. They can sort of roam free. They're both awesome, actually. Absolutely awesome. A word on France, though. The Thomas Ramos thing at 10 is fascinating. Like, just to be that good. Just to be that good. People talk about Dupont as the best player in the world. He's the best scrum half in the world.
I think he's the best player in the world.
He's the best player in the world.
I might go as far as say it's Thomas Ramos. The most natural... No, he's flawed, though, isn't he?
He is. Like,
he might be the most naturally talented player in the world. I don't know quite... There's something about this guy which is special.
He's got many, many positive attributes.
His defence isn't one, though.
His defence, and again, it was found wanting.
That Ramos and Deportier between them, that was a turnstile for some of the game.
It was, yeah. But... Dupont, can you name a weakness in Dupont's game?
No.
Defence is, he's very, very strong in all aspects of defence.
Awful line-out jumper.
Yeah, I bet he's good, though, Tim.
If you put him in there...
I bet he flies.
Like, he has no weaknesses.
He's definitely the best nine. He might be the best. I don't know. Is Dupont as good as Ramos at 15 or something?
I think he'd be close to as good as Ramos at 15.
Honestly, there's an argument. Looking at the French team yesterday and thinking, if Jonathan Danti is a spent force, is there an argument for Legarec 9, Dupont 10, Ntamack 12?
Ntamack 12. Maybe.
I think there's all sorts of things going on. Well, the thing that England were telling you was, it's all about a journey, you know, we're evolving. Oh, you got criticised for that, Tim.
Yeah, I did. I saw the email saying that I mentioned on my YouTube video that on a journey. I was kind of quoting Steve Borthwick when I said that. But yeah, I did say it nonetheless.
Well, quietly, it's France that are on the journey. So you've got the Garak, you've got Bierberet, you've got
Deportier,
you've got Leo Barra,
and then Barre.
And, you know, the young prop off the bench.
Manny Mayafu.
Yeah, these are the guys which are on a journey, because this is a completely new team in lots and lots of ways. Mm-hmm. The two second rows are completely different. Well,
Flamont's back,
yeah. But it was, what's his name? Wilhelmsy, yeah. And...
Wauquiez,
yeah. So, you know, it's a very impressive thing that France have done. And to think that Nolan Legarec is the second choice nine.
Yeah.
Absolutely frighteningly good.
He is superb. In
that first try that he finished, second try, I can't remember what try it was. Anyway, the try that he scored, I think it was their first
the
try.
The first try, yeah.
Try of the tournament. That was unreal rugby.
I think try of the tournament, Italy have probably got two or three contenders for try of the tournament, including
at
least
one in the
game. Yeah, I think
that one might just pit the Italians.
Maybe. It was a hell of a try with the Ficou break and then the offload.
Parade
dummy
and then just turning Marcus Smith inside out and the offload.
Do you know, though, the try I love the most, and I was talking to my wife about it, of all things, was the Marcus Smith try. Because
Marcus Smith try was ace.
The reason I liked it so much is it was an example of how you play rugby with what you have. So Marcus Smith gets the ball in an unfamiliar position, which is from 15. He's not fast enough. He's not big enough, but he uses what he has to score that try. I thought it was remarkable. So instead of going around the outside, because he's not fast enough, that little jink back inside, and because he's not strong enough to push someone on the floor, he pushes himself away with that handoff. Do the handoff to get to create that distance and then finishes. I thought that was awesome.
It was a great try, that.
Yeah, it's
lovely.
It was. Nice.
It's a guy that knows how to play rugby.
Was that the one where Ford did the little tip-on pass?
Yes. No, that was Tommy Freeman.
That was Freeman at the end, which was Ford quick pass and Marcus Smith quick pass with Freeman looping around. Freeman, Charlie Morgan has put something on Twitter on that try. It's an angle from behind the post showing Freeman's work off the ball.
Freeman is becoming a apprentice Pernod.
It's a great comparison.
Isn't it?
Particularly for this week, but I think you're right. I think he's...
I didn't see enough to make that comparison. I didn't see enough.
That's why he's an apprentice.
Running laterally across the pitch for no meters gained, but maximum defenders beaten.
Yeah. Well, padding the stats.
Did you see? So, Pernod and Freeman, so they ran for basically the same number of meters, both about 70. Mm-hmm. They both made three clean breaks. Pernod did not score a try. Freeman did score a try. But in defenders beaten... So for 70 metres, Freeman beat three defenders for 70 metres. How many did Pernod beat for his 70?
Five?
10.
Crikey. Wow.
He is a freak, isn't he?
Yeah, comfortably the most defenders beat. He's so good. He's so good at rugby.
I think France are going to be... it's been difficult because their starting halfbacks are out and all the rest of it. By the time that... Dupont comes back, I think they'll be such a better team for it, because they're not just reliant on one player like we thought that they might be. I mean, yeah, okay, they'll be disappointed that they've lost the games and drawn the games that they have, but to me, the players that they've bought through, the players that they've blooded, they are in French rugby in general is in rude health. And I was thinking about this compared to the lads at Wales
are blooding. Like, they're doing it out of necessity. France are putting these boys in there because they're the best, and they clearly are the best and most talented.
And France, so they took the unusual but completely legitimate step to drop Pasolo Tuilagi from the main squad to the under-20s this week.
Brilliant.
Which is, well, I don't know if you saw any of that game, either of you, on Friday night.
No, but did England win that?
England were getting battered at half-time.
Yeah.
They were, I can't remember the exact scoreline, but say four tries to two, one or two down, and came back to win 45-31. And a phenomenal second half performance
and,
by England.
And win the Six Nations Championship on points difference.
Now,
yeah.
The flanker's name is Pollock. Is it Henry Pollock, maybe?
Henry Pollock, yeah. Northampton Saints.
Who scored again this
Did
week.
He?
Yeah.
Now, I have seen him for Saints. I was like, nah, okay, young flanker, great. He's built himself quite the reputation in the under-20s.
He is. I think for him to compete at the highest level, he'll need to put on a bit of timber. Because he's quite lithe. He's very athletic, very quick. One of the French wingers tried to step him and accelerate round the outside of him. On the wing, he found himself defending on the wing. He just comfortably glided across and made the tackle.
See you around.
I was actually annoyed at Pasolo Tuilagi playing in that game because it denied us uncle versus nephew in Manu's final match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which would have, had there been a collision between those two, then it might have been like the Large Hadron Collider.
It might
have formed a black hole and humanity, as we know, it would have been ended.
It'd be
in
a
that
really
moment.
Good end to some sort of movie. There's a beautiful story arc there. What was it? Oh, you made me forget.
You were gonna say something about Henry Pollock?
No, it's completely gone.
For Jaw, what's his name? Asher
Opoku for Jaw.
Yes, scrummaging nicely again. Ben Redshaw,
winger, good player.
Yeah, he's played right across the back line, played 13, 15 and wing in this tournament. And he was actually in the England World Cup training camp for a couple of weeks last summer, despite only just finishing at Sedba. Like, he was Sedba captain.
Was he really?
Yeah. He is a very good player. And I think... Unless something remarkable happens at Newcastle, that's the kind of position that Newcastle are going to be bringing lads like Brantingham or.
Brantingham's gone. That's devastating.
But they're going to end.
They're the ones they need to keep. Like, fine, let Matteo Carreras go to my beloved Bayonne, but keep Ben Redshaw.
Well, is Guy Pepper going?
Don't know actually.
I'm pretty sure Guy Pepper is wanted by Saracens. Whether he's gone or not, I don't know.
But they're going to end up, unless something changes, they're going to end up being a feeder club, which is sad for Newcastle, but it's maybe good for the Premiership and good for England if they can bring players like these boys through.
Well, they do serve a very useful purpose for Premiership rugby and rugby in general, which is they tend to attract lads from Cumbria. Now, if you know your geography, you'll know that getting from Newcastle to Cumbria is not easy at the best of times.
But it's the closest.
It's the closest one, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So you get a lot of those Cumbrian lads, and there's so much talent around Cumbria, which is just untapped. But there's nowhere to put a professional team. Where are you going to put it? Carlisle? It's just not going to happen, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
So
it can't work.
No, it can't. What was I going to say about Newcastle?
Brantingham has not officially left, at least according to this. Brantingham has. Guy Pepper has not officially left.
No, I thought he was wanted by Saracens, but maybe...
He's probably wanted by lots of... I mean, he's in the England squad. He was called up to the Six Nations, wasn't he?
Okay, well, I think we're pretty much done on France-England. As English fans, are you happy with this campaign?
Yes, I think so. In all of the games, other than the Scotland game, which was poor, Scotland just have England's number at the moment. Finn Russell has England's number. Other than that, England either won or could have won every game. They were in the fight right until the last second.
Mm-hmm.
And against Ireland, they won it last minute with a kick. Against France, they lost it last minute with a kick. But to be in the fight is something. Like it's a skill, particularly in this game. against France. They could have gone down. Mm-hmm. What would they have been down? 13 points down? Were it not for that first Ollie Lawrence try just before halftime? To come back from that position away in France.
16-10 at halftime, yeah. It was 16-3 at the time, 13 points down.
Yeah, it would have been 13 points were it not for that. So they were 13 points down after 39 minutes. To come back from that position against a good France side in France is good. There's England teams of old and many other nations teams now that just would not come back from that.
Yeah, I'm really weathering the storm in the first 20 as well, which was impressive.
Agreed. 100%. They weathered that storm and then were 3-0 up. And then,
and then conceded 30 points. More points.
They conceded 16 points. But what I would say is I probably annoyed a bunch of people listening with my defence of England and their pragmatic style of rugby during the World Cup. I thought it was the right move. I was quite happy with it. Phil was broadly the same, recognised England's limitations and had to work within that. And I totally defend that. A lot of people didn't. What's pleasing is that whilst I was absolutely saying at the start of the Six Nations, no, I want to win the Six Nations. I'm less bothered about how England play. I just want to win the next game, win the next game, win the next game. Steve Borthwick has, broadly speaking, done that. They've won two games the last two Six Nations. Now they've won three, but as Phil says, we're very close to actually competing in the other games as well. But they've managed to do that and evolve the way they play to an extent that you actually feel like they could be dangerous against the very best teams in another year, 2 years' time.
I think they will be. I think this group of players now, just keep them together, let them develop, with the exception of the front row, who you need maybe wholesale replacements.
Dan Cole is the best tight end at the moment, which is a little bit worrying, because
that is worrying.
He's not going to be. It's unlikely he'll still be playing at the next World Cup. He'll be 40
on that,
or maybe 39.
To Alangi's last game, I don't remember Danny Kerr saying he's retiring.
I don't think he's officially, but
Danny Kerr is doing it the right way. He's doing it the way I think you should do, which is he is always available for England. If his country calls, he will answer that call. He will never ever do the. I understand people doing it. I'm retiring from international rugby, but Danny Kerr is doing it the way you should do it.
Agreed.
So I think that may have been his last England game, but he will never say he's retired from England.
Yeah, but why? We're common with the comms team continually saying this is his last game.
Don't know.
No, I don't know.
Unless he has actually.
Yeah, I'm thinking he might have said it, because they carried on saying, "Oh, we won't be seeing Danny Kerr again. Manu Tuolangi, not seeing him again."
Is Danny Kerr leaving for France? Has he got an offer on the table to go somewhere? Is he off to Provence as well?
I don't think so.
Hey, that's one thing I'm keeping an eye on. Manu Tuolangi tomorrow. I've never been to Biarritz before. It's a tiny airport, and Manu Tuolangi is apparently due in town to talk to Bayonne tomorrow.
Really?
Yes.
Tuolangi watch.
Oh, and Sale they've confirmed signing Naya Salevu, haven't they?
Yes, they have. That's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
isn't he the same age as Manu, or maybe even older?
Yeah, but he plays
33.
Yeah. 33.
But he's still playing very nice rugby.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have the same injury record as Manu.
Very true.
I don't like it, to be honest. I don't see the point. Like, there are so many good young centres to be found. I don't think Nicol Avery's going to win you the Premiership.
He got Rob Dupree. He only became a great 10 when he played 13. That presumably means he's going to go back to being a dreadful 10.
Or they're going to start playing Naya Salevu at 10.
And George Ford at 13, so he's a really good 10 for the playoffs.
Even
now
better.
Now you're talking.
I just what gets me about this sort of signing is, do you know when you pay loads of money for... I mean, Sale don't pay. Well, okay, whatever. But how can I put this? When you've got limited resources, right, and you pay money to people to design your salary cap and fit players in and out, I just want to see something a bit more inventive than a 33-year-old centre which we've got from France. You know, I don't believe at this point they've gone through every single centre which is available to them in the in England, let alone the world, and just come up, oh, must be Nicol Avu. It feels like how business used to be done, or it feels like someone doing business on Championship Manager. It doesn't feel like a serious signing to me. I mean, it's a nice signing, it's a big name, but I want to see something more inventive. I want to see them.
It feels like they've outsourced picking the outside centre to the, I don't know, someone in the office. He's beautiful, Niatholevu. Oh, can we sign him? He's lovely.
Kind of like they've outsourced it to a 15-year-old with a sticker book. he's famous, we'll get him. And the reason I say 13, this...
Like, a 13-year-old with a sticker book or a 45-year-old divorcee in the commercial department.
No, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I said the same thing about Leicester Tigers signing... No, how I didn't. I
said Andre Pollard.
No, I didn't. I said the same thing about Pat Lam signing AJ McGinty. Like, there is no way with your 400 grand you've gone through every single player available to you for 400 grand.
On the planet.
On the planet, right? This is your process, is it? And you just happen to come back to us with the guy who you used to play with at Connacht. Okay, sure, Pat, sure. It's a bad way to construct a team.
Just back to, very briefly, back to Guy Pepper. Apparently, Bath are favourites to sign him.
Really? Well, that's what I was going to say. Talking of Bath, there is a player that came back this weekend who might be in contention for England. Ted Hill is fit again.
Interesting.
Isn't it?
And now, he has had a few injury problems, but he's a good player.
Do you know what? I've been... Bath put out the odd little workout video of him just getting back from... coming through rehab. He looks in good shape.
He's an amazing player.
He looks massive.
He is a legit England contender when he's fit.
Yeah, he is a big, strong boy. And he's one who can... do a similar role to that Courtney Laws, Chesham role at six.
He might be the difference, you know, from Bath simply making the playoffs to Bath winning the whole thing.
Coming back, him and Underhill.
Oh, good God.
And Barbary,
yes.
Yeah, if they get on a roll now with that back three, I mean, there's not many games left in the season. They just need to keep them serviceable for a little longer.
Ewells, JB.
Has he signed for sale yet?
Oh, yeah, that's going to be happening, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a rumour, wasn't it?
He was going to be replacing Ted Hill. And now, look, Niatholevu, I think I can get on board with.
Johnny Hill.
What did I say? Ted Hill.
Ted Hill.
Sorry. Yes. Niatholevu, I can get on board. Charlie Ewells would be unforgivable. Charlie Ewells would be unforgivable.
Well, they have signed Leroux Rouettes.
There we go. That tells me that they are... that they're properly looking throughout the entire market there.
Who is listed at 2 metres and 5 centimetres, which puts him just north of 6'8".
Good. Let me get... can I have one guess at his nationality?
Dutch!
Leroux Rouettes. University of Joburg. Born in Pretoria. Born in Boksburg, South Africa. He's listed as 138 kilograms.
Sign him up. That's what I want to see.
He's signed.
That's perfect.
He is officially signed.
Imagine if you got Charlie Ewells instead of that guy. I don't even need to see him play. That's amazing.
Right.
Is Dimes back in charge of Sale?
Well, he just let Phil Brantingham go.
Well, I don't think he's got that sort of control. Not until he gets his Saudi money. then you'll see.
Right, we have been recording. How long have we been recording for now? And we have said almost no words on the 2024 Six Nations champions.
Boys, can I apologise for ever having an issue with you about JB, about the Paul Gustard fiasco? And can I go, because I feel rude that I'm out of the table? It's 11:10 local time, and I'm in their home, and I feel like I should.
Yes.
At least be there when the night winds up.
Do you know what, Tim?
You should, Tim.
Do you know what, Tim? I would never hold it against you or anyone who decided to do anything like this.
It is perfect.
Well, I've done about an hour of a podcast, so you know.
And it is perfect Egg Chaser's behaviour. You are keeping with the theme. Right. Thank you very much, Tim.
All right, mate. Take care.
Bye.
Oh. I can't describe how much I'm smiling now. live on air.
That is brilliant.
Isn't it?
But Tim...
completely different. It's completely different.
It is completely different.
We need to understand. It's completely different.
It is completely different. Completely different. But Tim has got some already, even in that podcast, he's given us some fascinating insight from his conversations that he's been having this evening.
I know. It just shows what great conversations that we should be having.
Exactly.
And should have had. And we're very well justified to have. So.
And should never and will never be held against us ever again. Ever.
Right. Ireland, congratulations, they're the champions in like one of the most underwhelming championship wins ever, really.
Well, it's maybe that signifies the overall quality, other than Wales. Because Italy have been legitimately good this year, mm-hmm. drawing with France, beating Scotland. England and France are on an upward trajectory. Scotland are legitimately good when, save for that Italy game. And Ireland have kind of won this tournament at a bit of a canter.
Well, when they've been punched in the face, they've not been great. And that happened against England. France took a little bit of time to get going.
They did. I mean, they dismantled France very comfortably.
And Scotland, I thought, were fabulous for long periods of the game.
Their defence was superb.
Yeah. It was about 60 minutes where they just couldn't be broken down. But, I mean, I guess this is where you've got to say, this is where I'm the world class. They stuck to it. And when they did break them, they really broke them.
They did. And Ireland, I mean, it was not a performance for the ages by Ireland, but they did enough to get the win. And it would have been more comfortable were it not for that superb Hugh Jones try with 2 or 3 minutes to go.
Yeah.
But one of the key things, given that apart from Wales, everyone's beaten everyone else. So Italy beat Scotland, Scotland beat England, England beat Ireland, Ireland beat France. All the rest of them, apart from Wales, who just lost to everyone, everyone has got wins or draws with the France Italy against everyone else. So it's an even table, save for Ireland, who are 5 points clear, but they're also, their points difference is 78 points better than anyone else's.
It's quite a lot.
It's a huge amount. They conceded half as many points as anyone else. And they scored 20 more points than anyone else. So that's where it does, when you look at the tournament as a whole, the Ireland do stand out.
On Ireland, so I would say the most impressive player, probably in the Six Nations in the opening week or 2 weeks, was Joe McCarthy.
For the first 2 weeks, I would agree.
I just haven't seen anything of him since.
He has been quiet.
Hasn't he?
Since.
Yeah, and yet he's still holding down that four shirt. And I thought they might move that to Ryan or someone else. But he's been the ever present starter.
Yeah, maybe he's not been as noticeable because he's not had the big hits and big carries.
It's the carries that I'm missing.
He's still been effective, and maybe he's doing more of the unseen work. But you're right, he was one of the most impressive players of the tournament.
Yeah, if he'd have carried on in that form, I mean, who did they beat opening round? Was it Wales?
France.
Oh, France, yeah.
They smashed France, and he was huge.
Yeah, he was huge. That's what I want to see. I want to see more of that. Yeah, I know what you're saying about Ireland. I know the points difference sort of, you know.
It tells a story. It's not the full, don't get me wrong, that is not the full picture, but it does tell a story.
It's so depressing, isn't it? Like, watching Ireland, thinking what could have been. Because everyone knows when you see them, doesn't matter how good they are, they've blown it. They've already blown it. Like, the World Cup was so devastating to them. So you've got the remnants of this amazing team, which might get a bit better, but to what end?
Other than Sexton and Omani, who I don't think he's actually decided, but he probably won't still be starting in 3 years' time. The whole of the rest of the team, their age profile means that they will all be playing in the next World Cup.
Well, James Lowe, Bundiaki, those are two other lads that probably wouldn't.
Maybe Bundy, Henshaw, maybe not.
Henshaw will be 33.
He'll be fine.
Do you reckon? Gibson Park will be 35. So you might be you might be missing Lowe, Aki, Henshaw, Gibson Park.
How old is James Lowe then?
He's 31, I'd guess, like that. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure they can win.
Yeah, he is. He is 31.
I mean, even Van, I reckon even Van der Vleet is about 30.
Yeah. I think most of those have still got a good chance of even playing.
I think the biggest reason they'll still be playing is because of the failure of this World Cup. It'll be like, there will be a score to settle.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but back to the game. I still think that the game hinged on that one sort of 10-minute period before Scotland got the yellow card. And was it Bundiaki that scored? Who scored?
Porter scored.
It was I quite liked the penalty move that they used.
Yeah, yeah. The little...
Sneaky, isn't it?
Out the back.
Yeah.
That was nice. And I particularly like the move for the first try, which was a Scotland 5-metre line out overthrown straight to Sheehan. That's always handy when that happens.
Yeah, I don't know how this Ireland team stays motivated. I don't think I could be motivated.
I was thinking about... So the last 2 weeks of Ireland have not been as impressive as the first 3 weeks, I think it's fair to say. Mm. Not least of all because they lost last week, but their first three games were far more comfortable than their last two. And I was thinking about a quote, quote from Ronan O'Gara, who was actually disrespecting Irish rugby.
Oh.
Before the final, last year's final, Leinster-La Rochelle, where he said something on the lines of...
I think I know what you were about to say.
Where Leinster were resting players for the league because they were worried about like fatigue. And he was like, well, they have to worry because they don't play that many tough games. Whereas,
We play
top 14, every game's a tough game. If you slip up in the top 14, you won't make the playoffs, or you could even end up being relegated.
Yeah.
So you've got to perform week in, week out, so it's not a problem to us. And I was thinking about that. Maybe the fact that these players are phenomenally talented and in a phenomenal team, have huge cohesion, but in the World Cup, where it is 5 weeks, well, the whole thing is 8 weeks, but they missed the final kind of 2 weeks. 5-6 weeks of back-to-back games. You play a physical, every single week matters. And the Irish, they're not actually used to doing that because at Leinster, they just don't do that.
Exactly right. Exactly
and
right.
It is to your point on, like, you've made this point, a very similar point to that before on steel sharpens steel, which I do agree with. There is then a too much steel. There's an inflection point where
diminishing returns.
Yeah, or it would actually be negative returns. Yeah, not even diminishing returns. It would be negative cost after that point. And I do wonder whether they've got the balance right. Leinster being so strong and being able to rest half their team half the year.
I guess the thing we don't know, okay, is it's very easy. So I'm going to get into Irish defence mode now.
This is not like you.
Yeah, it's very easy to say, you know, steel shop and steel, but we don't know the counterfactual, which is if we did play these guys a little bit more together, if they get worse. We don't know if this is like the optimum. The optimum they may be is very narrow losers or very close winners, or close losers, or what this might be as good as they can get because of that system. But I don't know.
Yeah, I just feel like they'd already beaten New Zealand twice in 2023 in New Zealand's backyard. They were the form team. They were the number one team going in the world going into that tournament. They should have won that game.
Yeah, they should have.
They'd already beaten South Africa, the ultimate champions, in a less important game. So yeah, you're right. We don't have the counterfactual, but I do wonder if there's the balance could be redressed slightly.
Yeah,
In doing so, you don't then expose as many players, and so perhaps you don't get the same level of talent coming through overall. So there might be not a negative for those players, but an overall negative for the club and the country.
Did Ronan O'Gara also say something along the lines of, they're not that good, they've only won it once in 11 years, make it 12 years now? He said something like that, like...
He probably did.
Like, you know, you're talking about them as the favourites, but they've only won it once in 11 years, so let's all settle down.
And they've been... they've been to, like, four of the last six finals, something.
When are they going to bring... When are they going to bring that guy back on board? That's what I want to know.
When Faz comes to England.
It feels, though, doesn't it, like... Ronan O'Gara is sort of this sort of troublemaking prodigal son who they're just not quite comfortable with. But he's clearly brilliant.
All the suits in Dublin don't like him.
Yeah, but he's clearly brilliant.
He is brilliant. I love listening to him because he's an unusual character.
Yeah.
His mannerisms, the way he talks.
He's spiky.
And with that, like, now he's got that French lilt and...
Mm.
It's like a slight French accent and almost a French kind of tempo yeah. to the way he speaks now.
Spiky and cocksure. Yeah, and if he's outside of your system as well, and, you know, I think the Irish system is very settled. I don't think they would take well to a disruptor coming in. I mean, look at who they appointed when they had the opportunity. The ultimate company man, Stuart Lancaster.
Yeah.
You know, or... who's the guy from South Africa now? He's just...
Nienaber.
Yeah. Not going to rock the boat.
I don't know about that.
I don't think he'd rock the boat. I mean, he was...
He's part of Razzie's team.
Yeah, but... that's the whole point. Like, Razzie had nice compliant guys underneath him. if it's Razzie, then you go, okay, this is exciting.
I'm not sure about that with Nienaber.
I think so. But then to get... You know, do you want loads of headlines and loads of controversy and loads of chat coming from the Ireland head coach, or if they gave him Leinster, or, well, could he even coach Leinster? Would he have to go to Munster? Would he want the Munster job?
Would he want the Leinster job?
He might have the Leinster job. Well, I don't know.
I don't think
he'd want it, no.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
He's not a Leinsterman. He'd want the Ireland job.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that storyline. when that finally happens, that will be the storyline.
We are at least 3 years away from that. At least.
Well, you don't know.
Well, unless... Well,
something happens to Borthwick, right? The dominoes fall. They come knocking for Andy Farrell. Andy Farrell goes...
They can't afford to get rid of Borthwick. They're still paying off Eddie Jones. They're still paying for Borthwick to get him in.
I think what they will do is they'll just neglect the stadium for
a few more years.
Yeah, in like another decade. They'll just neglect community rugby for a little longer.
Now, if they fired Bill Sweeney, now that's a sizable chunk of cash that they could spend changing coaches.
I'm pretty sure you could get a CEO for Twickenham for... 300k? Do you think someone would do it for 300k?
I'd do it for 300k.
Yeah. But, you know, say if you've got some city grandee.
Yeah.
Or someone who's like run a big organisation for most of their life.
Oh, yeah.
And they just want one last job and they love rugby. You're telling me they won't go there for like a cut price just for a few years?
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of getting some absolute moron like they've currently got for £600,000-£700,000.
Oh, God, yeah. I remember looking at the reports and accounts.
It's six something, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's six something.
Oh my God! Yeah, I'd do it for half that.
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of. Do you know when we said there's no way you've gone through everyone in the world and come to Nigel Avil? There's no way they've gone through everyone in the world and come to Bill Sweeney.
Bill Sweeney,
not for that level of money.
If Bill Sweeney is the answer, what was the question?
Exactly right. Exactly right.
One other game. Did you see any of the Premiership Cup final?
No, but I know who won it.
I did watch a little bit. I was flicking between the under-20s. It was around the time when Leicester were down to 13 men. They had two yellow cards. And Gloucester snuck in one of their many, many Atkinsons, who are now sadly one fewer this week.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Mark Atkinson has retired.
Another chap I played with at Sedge. Sad to see him go.
Yeah.
Sausage legs 10.
So he is... He's actually in his testimonial year this year.
Ah.
So there are all sorts of golf events and all sorts of big events. So we'll be talking about that, I guess, in future podcasts.
Mm.
And he is currently, I think, working on the commercial side. But he should... That is one guy who we want... Do you know I'd whinge about the people that are on BT Sport?
TNT or
whatever,
any of them, ITV, BBC,
yeah,
whoever.
He is 100% somebody you need on TV.
Yes.
100%. Because he talks about the game in such a clear way. He knows it inside out. And he had to know it inside out. Because he, you know, although he was big, he was not the most physical. He was not the most athletically gifted. But he knows his rugby inside out.
And he's taken an unusual route.
Yes.
Like he was Sale, he played a bit of Sedge, he went down to Bedford, and it was that route. So it was several years of playing in the Championship that led him to Gloucester.
As much as I love Sam Warburton, he shouldn't be doing prem games, or Brian O'Driscoll, or Emily Scarrett, or anyone who's not played in the Premiership. Mm. My two penny there. So yeah, hopefully we will see Mark Atkinson on a TV screen.
He would be very, very good. Very good.
Agreed. I think we're done. Games next week?
There are. I think we're finally back after what seems like 100 years, back to Premiership.
Wonderful news.
Which means that we have got Friday night. Yes, we do. Friday the 22nd, 7:45 kickoffs. We have Bristol hosting Northampton, league leaders Northampton, and we have Leicester Tigers hosting Gloucester. So we say in Saint. Oh, it's a repeat of the
final.
The final.
Give me Tigers and who's
Bristol hosting Saints.
Bristol Saints. I'll Saints. Take Saints. Yeah.
I will also take a home win for Tigers and away win for Saints. And I'll just wait. Just let me get the table up so I can remind myself. It's been so long. I know Saints are top. English Premiership. There we go. Northampton Saints in first. Quinns in second. Bath in third, but those two are level on 37 points. Then Saracens, 36. Exeter Chiefs, 35. Leicester Tigers in sixth place on 33.
Christ, where's Sale?
Sale in seventh on 32.
Good Lord.
Sale only 2 points ahead of Bristol on 30 in eighth. And then it's an 8-point gap to Gloucester and a 18-point gap to winless Newcastle Falcons.
Right.
So we're saying Saints and Tigers win on Friday night.
Where are Sale this weekend?
On Saturday, we have Chiefs hosting Falcons, which will be a home win.
Yep.
And West London, historically West London, Derby, Saracens hosting Harlequins.
Saracens smash Harlequins.
I think they probably will.
I don't know why.
Front row would be the concern for Saracens, as we've said several times.
Yeah, but they've had that concern earlier on this season. They still smashed Harlequins.
Maybe, yeah, they did.
They absolutely levelled them.
So maybe Saracens to win that one. And on Sunday, seventh place Sale travel to third place Bath.
That's not an easy game.
It certainly is not an easy game.
Oh, this is not what they need right now. Bath, I think.
I think you're probably right. I think Bath will win that. And one final thing before we go. I wanted to look up the final of the European Nations Cup between Georgia and Portugal. I can never remember what it's called. European Nations Cup 2024. European Nations Rugby Cup. What is that? Rugby Europe Championship 2024. The final was tonight. It was an 8 p.m. kickoff.
Oh.
And
the winner is?
Georgia. It was played in Stade Jean Bouin in Paris, in the 16th arrondissement of Paris, 20,000-seater stadium. Portugal, 10. Georgia, 36.
Rubbish.
But Spain did win the bronze final. They beat Romania 40-33.
Yeah, cheats Romania. So, okay. So that basically concludes the podcast, thank God. And well, there are a few things I need to shout out. So first of all, North Dorset Sevens.
Yes, we should have done that at the top of the show as well.
But yeah, we didn't, so there you go. Email us, eggchasers.
Contact eggchasers@gmail.com.
We will forward your application, which will instantly be accepted, to to Major Lee. Major Lee will get it sorted, and then you can join us as a social member for a few beers, or a playing squad member. Imagine that.
Yes.
Imagine that, donning the famous Egg Chasers shirt with Uslot.
Uslot, and playing alongside many, many friends of the pod.
Exactly. Egg Chasers legends like Hugo.
Hugo.
Matt.
Hoppo.
Is he? You need two tours now.
Yeah. He's not. Dave Mack.
Dave Mack, yeah. Yeah. So.
Lee.
Many, many legends.
Referee Lee.
Yeah. We've got it all. We've got coaches, we've got referees. We've got a lot.
It's an eclectic bunch. I know.
It really is.
Mostly, it's a bunch of good boys. I can't talk. It's too late. Good boys who have a great weekend.
Yeah. Follow me on LinkedIn and at Beardmore, or otherwise known as Beardmore & Co. Independent Financial Advisors. You can follow Tim on YouTube, and if you want some pipes and wires, Phil.
Or not.
Right. And that'll be it. So until next week, when we all be all back together in at the Rugby Dungeon, let the boys play and have a lovely week. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.